Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening. We have a special guest joining us, a frequent visitor to our program, historian, lecturer, and master teacher, Baba Ashra Kwesi, will be joining us this evening in conversation. The African origin of the Bible and the Quran is the topic for discussion this evening. And we'll get started with our conversation with Baba Ashra Kwesi after we take a brief break. Baba Kwesi.
Hotel Brother Booker.
How are you, brother? How are you, sir?
Oh, fair to middling, as the elders would say.
I'm glad you're back with us again in the community, as you call it.
Yes, sir. We got to honor Bobby Wright, who coined that term, community.
Okay.
To educate, to liberate in our own community. We can't depend on European universities to educate us. They only train us to do jobs for them.
And usually, when you've joined us, it's me and Brother Reg, but we added another brother with us, Brother Ralph, dynamic brother.
Peace, Brother Ralph.
Hey, peace to you, Brother Kwesi.
Baba Kwesi, you're here on Sunday. That's May 18th at 3 p.m. at the North American Motor Inn, a Temple of Maya, and Brother Mukasa Africa is bringing you here. And you'll be at the North American Motor Inn at 4444 City Line Avenue. That's in Philadelphia, 19131 area code. And the topic of conversation is what we want to kind of preview tonight on our program to give people a little taste of some of the things, at least verbally. I think it's more dynamic when they see it visual. But we're going to kind of preview things, highlight things tonight of the African origin of the Bible and the Quran. Brother Kwesi, I've been to several of your presentations when you've been in the city here. And what made you choose this particular topic for this particular occasion?
Yes, sir, Brother Booker. Well, first of all, I have to give credit where credit is due, and to my teacher, the Grand Master Teacher, Dr. Yusuf Nyakinen. And there's always been an interest in who we are as an African people. And back in about 1973, I heard Dr. Ben at Long Beach State, and he gave a very powerful presentation on African origin of civilization and religion. And he covered a lot of area, and a lot of what he was speaking on that day I'd never heard before. And I was very inspired, motivated by the information. But, of course, we don't have our own schools to educate us in this information. And so a lot of times we have a lot of doubt when it comes to talking about our story. And equally that, during that time, after Dr. Ben's lecture, I said, Dr. Ben, can you prove what you're saying here? He said, young man, I can take you back and show you. That's the first time someone told me they can actually show me. So I made that journey with him in 1981, where he actually revealed a lot of the information that we see in the Western world, Western civilization. Many concepts that we see in the Bible are written right there on the books in stone by black people, by African people. And when I got there, he said, young man, we need people like you to do field research. I did not know that I would spend 14 years doing field research with him in the land of Kemet that is now called Egypt today, and as well as in the Sudan, returning back to these ancient sites of Maserat, Nagat, and Medawi, which is ancient Kush, which is the mother, actually, of Egypt. And now 34 years of my life, Brother Booker, being inspired by what our ancestors left us. There's nothing like it on the planet Earth to see these great monuments and temples up and down the Nile. And without them, what we know in the Western world, what we've been taught in Western civilization and religions, whether that be Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, as well as other religions of Buddhism, Confucianism, and so on, was based off of many of the spiritual systems that go back countless thousands of years. And that's why we have to refer to it as the Fallopian Tube. The Fallopian Tube, because like the Fallopian Tube of our mothers, without it we would not be here, and without Mother Africa we would not be here without that Fallopian Tube. So even when we look at the science of anthropology, has documented the fact that early humanity started in Africa. This is the early monogenetic origin, or that one origin that started in the Great Lakes region. This is long before many of the biblical counts, before the Western world. Early Africans who, right there in the Great Lakes region, as well as the highlands of Ethiopia and the Dar Valley, have were the first people who, from their observation of countless thousands of years, they gave us many spiritual ideas that ended up on the books and stones right there in the land of Kemet, that, as I said, is called Egypt today.
It's important to me, and we have historians on this show at least once every month. We had Brother Chike Akua on, I guess, about 3 weeks ago. And I mean, you're on constantly. Renoga Rashidi, Tony Browder. You know, I can't stress enough that, you know, our people are spiritual people. And since we've been here in this land of former chattel enslavement, we became a religious people. But the religions that a lot of our people believe in as a faith, they really don't know anything about. And when I say don't know anything about, I'm talking about the origin of these faiths. And it goes back to the topic that you're going to discuss. You know, for example, a lot of our people are, in this country, are Christians. But the majority of our people base their faith of the Greek translation of Hebrew scriptures, whether they realize it or not. And if we do a kind of like a historical DNA of these religions, I mean, you can look at Islam, which came from Muhammad, and I think the years around 635 AD, if I'm not mistaken. You go back a little further than that, you have the Septuagint Bible, which was written in Egypt. And before that, you have the laws of Moses. But all of these things come from spiritual ideas which come off the continent. You've done research. You've seen a lot of this material. Talk about the origin of a lot of these things and how our people, I think it's a must that we understand clearly what we're dealing with. That way, if somebody wants to believe in a certain faith, they can do it with a strong knowledge base. I just don't think our people have the proper knowledge base of any of the faiths they believe. What do you think about that, Brother Crazy?
Yes, Brother Booker, that's a very powerful statement. First of all, we've got to understand that what we got here in America and the various Bibles, and specifically what one most people know is the King James Version of the Bible, keep in mind, this is all we have known, okay? Now, as we see as time going on, we've known more about the Hebrew version, we've known more about the Quran. But when it goes back to dealing with African people's story thousands of years before that time period, it has not been in the educational system. Keep in mind that the whole sciences, especially the one that I just spoke of, like anthropology, these are recent sciences, okay? And these sciences where Europeans came in and studied in Africa. At one time, they didn't even consider Africa to be the home of humanity, even though Darwin said that, you know, if you want to search for the origin of humanity, you got to go back to Africa. But the racism was so vicious towards African people and the hatred towards African people, they didn't even consider Africa to be the home of humanity. So, of course, there was no research done there until the leakies who let it all leak out that Africa was the home of humanity. And, of course, we see some of the oldest human fossils. I take groups to Ethiopia every year, the highlands of Ethiopia, and there you see Adultu, 160,000 years. Okay, now this predates the biblical Adam of only 6,000 years as we got it. So Adultu predates him by, you know, thousands of years, but of course this is all we have known. And the science that they refer to as Egyptology, I don't like to use the term because it equates with their whole colonial period. This is where the time when Napoleon came in and they brought in all their sciences and they started to study ancient Egypt. And there we can see that they came in, and this is where the Greeks, long before Napoleon, this is where they got their information from. But, of course, we did not have any sciences around Egyptology during the time when we were kidnapped from the African continent. So this is a time for our awakening. This is a time that we should open up our mind. I know that many people have a lot of different belief systems, and they believe they may be Christians, as I said, Hebrew and Muslims and so forth, but that's what one believes. But once we start to look at the facts of who we are as a people, we can't start our time with a religious time period. We're a very ancient people and a very old, old people. And as I always say, no matter what religion that we are, as black people in this country, we can trace it back to Africa. But, of course, one has to have an open mind. You can't have a hatred towards Africa. We know in the Western world they created this hatred towards Africa. That's what made slavery work. We were not identified as Africans on the plantation. All the negative names that we still use towards each other today were created there to keep us away from our identity. So even today, we still have a hatred in a sense, whether that be through the Ham story that was created. This is an allegorical racist myth. It started around 550 A.D., and ended up in the Babylonian Talmud version of the Bible. And this is the story, especially with this movie out here about Abraham now. And people believe these to be actual stories when they were based off of myths and so forth. The taking of the African Canaanites' land in the name of God. It wasn't a political movement at that time. It was the God that the people were worshiping at that time. So this is how the whole Ham story was created, by taking black folks' land. So we've got to go back and start to study in Africa. We can see that, as I said before, the ancient monuments and temples are there. But we look at the creation story as we know it in the Bible, and the Genesis, by the way, which is a Greek word that means the beginning. But this is how we got it from the Bible interpretation, that Jehovah God created the heavens and the earth. And the question that we've got to ask, are there stories that predate those stories? There are a spiritual genius, okay, that's still locked up in the African ancestral genetic memory bank that is there, that without that African genius that created these spiritual stories, what we know in Genesis, what we know a creation story, would not have existed. What proof and facts do we have to validate this, Brother Booker? Well, through my travels, and when I travel through Europe, I always like to go to the museums, and of course, going to the British Museum, you see all the treasures that they stowed out of Africa and the colossal statues and everything that they drug out of Africa and housed in their museums. And even though you have all these Europeans and Asians and others who travel through the British Museum, no one talks about one specific stone. I think it's one of the most powerful pieces in the British Museum, even though the other pieces are very powerful as well. But what makes this one specifically powerful is the Memphite Theology Stone. What makes this Memphite Theology Stone so unique? Well, first of all, this is a stone that was found by a Cushite African named Shabaka. And this stone was already owed to him. Shabaka is an African king, okay, who lived in the 25th dynasty around 700 years BCE. So the stone was already owed to him. What is on this stone, and what language is it written in? Is it written in Hebrew? No. Is it written in Aramaic? No. Is it written in Arabic? No. It's written in a language that actually predates all those languages. It's written in a language called the Medunecer that the Greeks referred to as the hieroglyphics. Even though Champollion and Thomas Young deciphered some of the Medunecer, but not all of it, but here we have spiritual ideas on this stone talking about the creation of the world in the Memphite Theology Stone. The stone is dated back to around a time period of 4000 BCE, and it talks about the spiritual deity, the spiritual god, Ptah, creating the universe. Now, as I said, the Genesis story, which, as I said, is a Greek word that means the beginning, did it exist yet? It did not exist yet, okay? But this is the foundation where someone came and copied from this stone, okay, to make up the creation story. And when you translate that story, it talks about how Ptah came forth and created the plants. He created all things which creep and crawl. Very much identical to what we see in Genesis in the Bible. And then he created light and air and heaven and earth. And then out of the womb, okay, of Nut, this is referred to as the heavens, Here we see the first man and woman are created. That's called a sar and a set. Now, did the Adam and Eve story exist yet? No, there was no Adam and Eve story. Did not exist yet. The Adam and Eve story is a Hebrew story. Is it the beginning of the story? It is not the beginning of the story or the oldest story that we got of creation of a sar and a set. Now, what is the difference between a sar and a set and the Adam and Eve story? There's a big difference in terms of how they are created. And that major difference is the fact that here we see that a sar and a set were created simultaneously. There was no rib taken from the man to make the woman. We have to understand the spiritual system where African people drew their spiritual ideas from, and that was based off of the matrilineal system, what they saw in terms of the spiritual principles. They did not have a misogyny around the feminine principles. They had no misogyny around a goddess concept. So in ancient Kemet, they said for there to be a god, it must be a goddess, and for there to be a goddess, it must be a god. So it was a spiritual dialectical laws of opposites. So the creating of a sar and a set, the first man and woman, equally are based off of that spiritual dialectical laws of opposites. But they were created simultaneously, as I said. No rib was taken from a sar to make a set. That did not exist. Everything was based off of that macro womb, which was referred to as the heavens, and the micro womb. In fact, the heavens was looked at as a feminine principle as well as the African goddess called Nut. So when we see later on the patriarchs who got this story from ancient Kemet, we do know that when black people were coming from the Tigris-Euphrates, we do know that black people were there because the Natufians go back over 10,000 years. But we also know that there were others coming from the north, from known as the Hyksos, who were coming in. So we see a mixture of patriarchal ideas and Kemetic spiritual ideas like a pot that was mixed up in the land of Canaan, where a lot of these migrations and people were coming into Canaan before they came into Egypt. But many ideas were already drawn out of ancient Egypt, many spiritual ideas that go back thousands of years. So here we see this creation story of a sar and a set who was created by Ptah. Ptah saying, let there be light. Early monotheism, or the concept of one God, was already told here. Here we go, and I show our groups every year where the symbol, okay, of Aset was also a symbol of her uterus, a symbol called the Netra Ankh, or divine life. And there you see the king who wants divine life, and she puts the Ankh up to his nostrils, giving him life. This parallels greatly to many of the stories that we see of in the biblical account in terms of in Genesis, where the Lord God breathed into Adam's nostrils and breathed life into him. But here our ankh are showing a symbol called the Netra Ankh. Why would they use that symbol called the Netra Ankh, or meaning divine life? Because they had no problem showing where is life going to come from. The life is going to come from the womb. So they had no problem showing that symbol breathing the life, okay, up to his nostrils. Mm-hmm. These books in stone are still there. They're not mystical places. They're not places that used to be. They're not places that we cannot find. They're places that we can see where ideas were taken from. Were there spiritual holy writings and holy books? Yes, they were called ancient scrolls. And this scrolls here, they wrote spiritual writings on papyruses. Okay, this is where we get the name paper from. There was no English language yet. There was no King James Version of the Bible yet. In fact, it's the King James Version of the Bible. It's one of the last Bibles that were written from many, many Bibles. And even after the King James Version, even the New American Bible. So there are many, many Bibles that have been written. That's why, I know I'm jumping around here, but that's why it says on the King James Version of the Bible, diligently compared and revised. Well, an intelligent person would know diligently compared from what? And we have to go back to some of the earliest spiritual writings known as Per Imhuru. Now, Per Imhuru, when Wallace Budge stole these scrolls of Oni out of Kemet, that's now in the British Museum, here we see this is early ideas of salvation and resurrection as telling in the Per Imhuru. There were other forms of Per Imhuru on what is called the Pyramid Text. In the area of Saqqara that we take our groups annually every year, and we go down into the tomb of Teti. Now, this is of the 6th dynasty. This is the old kingdom over 4,000 years ago. It's still there of the writing of his salvation and resurrection. going into the afterlife, and is written all over his tomb in this particular period of the Old Kingdom. They're writing on the pyramids. That's why it's called the Pyramid Text. Whereas the Great Pyramid that most of us are familiar with, there's no writing in there, but in Teti, there's the writing in the Pyramid Text. This is the earliest spiritual writing that we call religious writings or religious texts today. There we can see that without that, what we know as various holy books, holy writings, would not have existed. But even going back to the early papyruses, okay, that the one that's in the British Museum that was written by Oni of the 18th dynasty over 3,000 years ago, here it's called Per Imeru, coming forth by day and by night. Wallace Budge calls it the Book of the Dead. Why is he referring to it the Book of the Dead? Because they were robbing the tombs. They had these scrolls they rolled up and put into their hands to go into the afterlife, okay, to be judged, to go on into the spiritual realm. This is the earliest spiritual foundation of morality and how you lived on earth. Okay, without it, what we see in the moral codes in Judaism, Christianity, Islam would not exist if it was not for this. But when we look at Per Imeru, we see it's translated coming forth by day and by night. That's interesting, coming forth by day and by night, because in Genesis, we see in chapter 1, verse 5, it says, "And the God called light day, and the darkness he called night." Now, when we look at that very closely and see, was that not copied from the Per Imeru? Okay, African people, black people created these spiritual ideas and spiritual writings that now has been incorporated into many of the writings that we see of today. All we have to do is start to open up, because after all, Biblical Archaeology Society and other Europeans are back there studying in Africa, even though they may be Christians, and even though they may be Hebrews, and even though they may be of various faiths. They have no problems in translating all this knowledge, but it's the world's best kept secret. Egypt has been the world's best kept secret. In fact, Egypt was feared by the church for a long time. Feared by the church because the church knew that it was plagiarizing many of the ideas from ancient Egypt. Some of the early Bibles that were written in Europe, in Egypt, like the Septuagint version of the Bible, was written right there in Egypt before it went to Europe. Okay, why in Egypt? Because when the Greeks came in, like Alexander, who commissioned Aristotle to plunder many of the temples of Ipitasut, that is now called Karnak today, is still there. It's not a mystical place. It's our largest temple and greatest temple on the planet Earth. There, the great hypostyle hall, the massive 79-feet columns of the 134 of them are still there. Here we see other great sites, okay, even though some of the other temples are in dilapidation, and even though some have been destroyed totally, like in Menefer that is now called Memphis today. But these are the ancient temples, okay, that the Greeks and later on the Ptolemies plundered for Egypt's ancient writing and ancient scrolls. It took countless thousands of years to develop this sacred spiritual knowledge that was housed in what they built, who the Ptolemies built, is the Alexandria Library, to house these ancient scrolls that go back thousands of years. It's from these ancient scrolls that was the foundation and the writing of the early Bibles as we know them, like the Septuagint version of the Bible. Why is it written in Egypt? Why is it not written in Europe? Why was it not written in Greece? Because of the spiritual writings that our ancestors had that goes back, as I said, for thousands of years. And it's from these writings of the Per Imeru, the Pyramid Text, and other spiritual writings that our ancestors had, where Europeans, who they're like the Ptolemies, who had 300 years to be in Egypt to study, okay, a lot of the ancient papyruses, okay, and from that, this is how they slowly started to develop the many ideas that we see in, whether it be in the Hebrew text or whether it be in the Christian text, and even when the Arabs came, okay, in 641 A.D., and came in to fight the Byzantine Romans and forced them out. So this knowledge was there. This is where they started to study the knowledge as well, and this is how they came in contact with a lot of the ancient African ancestral spiritual systems that the Greeks referred to as the mystery system, when it was actually the Shishata system, or the spiritual system going back for countless thousands of years. But when you go and look at people like Gary Greensburg, who wrote books, and Europeans who these books are not written for black folks to open up our minds. This is still in the secret circles of Europeans who have written many of the ideas, like Gary Greensburg, who wrote the Moses Mystery, the African origin of the Jewish people. Now, keep in mind, he is the president of the Biblical Archaeology Society in New York. Mm-hmm. And revealing, which he refers to as the Moses Mystery, revealing a lot of this ancient knowledge that I'm talking about, 101 Myths of the Bible, another book that he wrote, okay, revealing many of these ideas were taken from the Nile Valley and incorporated, even though in some cases corrupted, but incorporated into the various Bibles as we know them today. And, of course, you know, Egypt had to be vilified, demonized, and all these negative things. So people have not looked at ancient Egypt, okay, for negative connotations, okay, that was related to Egypt. Because if you're going to steal something from somebody, of course you're going to try to paint a negative picture of them, so no one would never listen to the fact that someone actually stole something from them. So this is what has happened to ancient Africa. This is what has happened to ancient Kemet, that is called Egypt today, where many ideas were taken from ancient Egypt. And all we have to do is take time out and start to look and start to study without being spooked out, because spirituality is a living force, okay? It's a natural force. We are naturally spiritual people, we as an African people. And I think this is what we have to start to look at. When we start to look at many ideas that were incorporated in the Bible, we start to look at the Ten Commandments, okay? Let's look at the laws of Ma'at. Now, I know some of us are not familiar with some of these terms. But, some of us may have heard the terms of
the Brother Quasi, before you go over, because I want to spend some time in that particular area where you're going, can you put your finger on the period of history when this paradigm started to shift? Because you talked about the early on when the Babylonian Talmud started propagating this Ham story. Did the paradigm start to shift during that period? Did it start to shift during the period of the Greeks when they made that?
That paradigm started to shift during the time period of the Greeks.
Okay.
During the time of specifically the Ptolemies.
Okay.
Okay, because they are the ones who usurped the throne of ancient Kemet and held the throne for 300 years, long enough to plagiarize and copy many ideas. Okay. From ancient Kemet, where they are the ones who actually built the Alexandria. Ptolemy the First is the one that actually built the Alexandria Library. Okay, keep in mind what we know is the Western world. What we know of places like England and Germany and all these places. These people were barbarians. Okay, they were not part of the civilized world. Okay, they were not part of the spiritual system. They did not have this knowledge. Okay, this knowledge was coming up out of Africa. This is what we've got to understand. So this is that during the period where that paradigm started to shift, because as other Europeans, okay, who came in and usurped the throne from the Ptolemies, like the Romans, they eagerly started to study the spiritual system. This is what brought the whole Christianity into the Western world with the Byzantine Roman Christians, okay, who took eagerly from many spiritual ideas. A lot of these spiritual ideas, Brother Booker, or scrolls, many of them are still right there in the cellar of the Vatican. Keep in mind, even though they burned the Alexandria Library, but there was still a lot of material, a lot of information that was still there that they have housed in the Vatican, the cellar of the Vatican. But keep in mind, what is this knowledge referred to? What did the Greeks refer to this knowledge as at this time? This was called the Hermetic Text, okay? The Hermetic Text was taken from the spiritual Netaru called Tehuti. When Gary Greensburg was talking about the Moses Mystery, actually that Moses Mystery actually goes back to Tehuti. Now, Tehuti, the Zoop type for Tehuti is, now in ancient Kemet, they use zoomorphic and anthropomorphic forms to convey what they were trying to say. Kind of like, you know, we see images and representations, okay, and whether it's the Bible, whether we're looking at the ram or the lamb, or Matthew, Mark, and John looking like as animals and so forth. So equally, Kemet used various Zoop types to convey what they were trying to say. And one of those Zoop types was the figure of Tehuti, which is the ibis bird with a long bill. That, because Tehuti symbolized not only intelligence, divine wisdom, and science, also writing. It is said that Tehuti is the one that actually wrote the Purim Haru, coming forth by day and by night. Now, when we look at the scriptures and we see that the scriptures, when we see it in red, okay, it's referring to that the spiritual deity, Ptah or Amun, is speaking back to one. Now, it's interesting because when you go to the scriptures in the Bible, you see Jesus, when it's in red, that is the indication that he is talking. Well, I take our groups to Men Kepharad to Hudi Mei's tomb, and there people are shocked to see the writing in red, okay? And as one story is told, that Tehuti wrote the Per Emeru in red, okay, with his fingers. But again, going back to Tehuti, he holds up a Uraeus symbol. He holds up a Uraeus, and the Uraeus with the cobra, and also it's two symbols. One is looked at as a cobra, and one is looked at as a Macbeth, okay, like a vulture, okay. And those were the two symbols that our ancestors used to represent that spiritual law of opposites, and also Upper and Lower Egypt is generally held on the Menes crown, okay, on the top. But the reason why I'm mentioning that staff of Tehuti, when you go to Deuteronomy and the Bible, it talks about Moses holding up the serpent, okay?
Yes.
Now, if you look, now I know I will reveal this in my lecture because I show visual documentation, because I know people hearing this, you know, is trying to follow without the visual documentation. But I reveal all of this in my presentation. But here he's holding up the serpent. That, when you compare that with Tehuti, he's equally holding up the Uraeus. Now, keep in mind, Tehuti was called the lawgiver. Now, what is Moses called?
The same thing, the lawgiver.
He is called the lawgiver. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we got the same. Now, another term for Tehuti is, he is also called Yahudi. Now, here we see the Yahudi, we can find that in the Hebrew religion. Is that correct?
Yes.
So where has it been traced back to? Now, in Islam, okay, we see that Moses is called Musa. The same exact stories that we have in the Old Testament of Moses, Abraham, Joseph, Jacob, Solomon, all of them are also in the Quran. Now, if we look at Jibril, okay, that is another figure of what's referred to as the angel of the Lord. Now, in Kemet, Tehuti is the Netter, divine entity. I guess you can look at that as like an angel-like figure, a divine entity, a representation of the divine force of the universe. But my reference to Gabriel, in the Quran, he is called Jibril. Now, looking at the pictures of Jibril, he's holding the same exact staff as Tehuti. What's also interesting that we see in the Quran that we are told that it was transmitted to the Prophet Muhammad by the archangel Jibril. This is what we're told in the Hadith, that Jibril came to Prophet Muhammad, and this is how the Quran came, because he transmitted that to him. Wait a minute. We see Jibril and see that figure with Jibril holding that staff identical to Tehuti. Tehuti, we know, equally wrote the Per Emeru. Where are these ideas coming from? Now, if we go to the Quran, we see that in the Quran Surah, or chapter 20, there's a term called Taha. Now, transmitting this knowledge of thousands of years and how it came down to the Quran, Taha is Tehuti. There's a brother named Rick Rafiq Bilal, okay, who wrote the Sacred Science, Kemetic Science in Islam, did a very powerful book on dealing many of the parallels with how even the Quran was formulated from many of the spiritual ideas of ancient Kemet. Tehuti is very powerful because when we look at even the Greeks, as I said, their Hermetic texts, okay, their Hermetic philosophy, came from Tehuti. I always call it philosophy because they were fools. They really never understood the spiritual ideas, but he's referred to the Greeks as the Hermes, Mercurius, Trismegistus as well. And that means three times great in astronomy, okay, also architecture and astronomy. So these are spiritual ideas that goes back to these Zook types, okay, or Netarus as they refer to in ancient Kemet, that goes back thousands of years. We're so old as a people that hearing this information, that it sounds very alien to us. It sounds, you know, like Tahuti, you know, who are the terms that we're using. But we're turning back the pages of time. And turning back the pages of time, not only are we all old people, but the spiritual ideas that African people brought to the world was started by African people. So as I was speaking about Moses and the lawgiver, and how the whole idea of the Ten Commandments was taken from the laws of Maat. Now keep in mind, this is an African spiritual goddess. This goddess represents a cosmic law, by the way, a spiritual cosmic law. And interesting enough, they had no problem showing the representation as a goddess. Now, the whole spiritual idea is based off of the fact that in the law of Maat, in the hall of Maat, your heart had to be weighed with the feather of Maat. And our ancestors understood you could do some bad deeds as long as your good deeds outweighed your bad deeds. But the justice system or the scale of justice is based off of these scales. And if they were not balanced right, if your good deeds outweighed your bad deeds, the idea of the eater of the heart called Emmet, the eater of the heart symbolized that you will cease to exist. You will no longer exist. Now, this is important because the foundation of the moral laws that we see in Judaism and Christianity and Islam are all based off of the laws of Ma'at, meaning truth, justice, and righteousness. Mm-hmm. Provided that the scales are balanced with her feather, then you can go on into the spiritual realm. This is where we get the idea you must be lighthearted from. Now, if we understood this and were able to go back and do the comparison like I have done for many years, and be shocked to find that when we look in the Bible in Proverbs chapter 21, verse 1 and 3, for example, we see something here. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. The Lord weighs the heart. Do what is right and just. That is the hall of Ma'at that I just said, where your heart had to be weighed with the feather of Ma'at. This is what we see in Proverbs. This is what we see, that whole scale of Ma'at. That's truth, justice, and righteousness. Now, if we go to the Quran in Surah, chapter 29, verse 33, here we see an idea called Ma'ad, the final return to Allah's judgment. This is equally coming from the African spiritual mystery system, from the African spiritual system, the laws of Ma'at, truth, justice, and righteousness. Now, in the tombs, they wrote these moral ethical laws that I reveal to our groups annually every year. I have not robbed. I have not stolen. I have not prolonged the offerings. You notice that it says, I have not. Mm-hmm. But proclaiming that they have not done this. Now, according to Sigmund Freud in a book called Moses and Monotheism, where Sigmund Freud is speaking of himself, that the laws of Ma'at, when we see the law of the Ten Commandments, rather, was taken from the laws of Ma'at, according to even Sigmund Freud. Now, Sigmund Freud does make the comparison to the fact of where in the laws of Ma'at it says, I have not, whereas in the Ten Commandments it says, thou shalt not. So here we see the Kemetic teachings is that one knew the moral ethical laws to proclaim that I have not, versus one in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not. But these moral ethical laws, originally 147, broken down to 42, 10 of those were taken to make up what we know as the Ten Commandments. Some people say, well, what about Hammurabi? Well, Babylonian, here, the laws of Ma'at equally predate Hammurabi and the Babylonian. So here we see the spiritual laws of Ma'at going back thousands of years before the Ten Commandments. African people and ancient people. Now, we did not have an institution or we did not have any spiritual theological schools to teach us this. So, unfortunately, many ministers and preachers, they have to go to the white seminary school to learn a white theology. And learning this white theology, they in turn come back to the community to continue to perpetuate a white theology. And this is the reason why many of our own people will fight against our own spiritual system, because we've been thoroughly indoctrinated into one way of looking at something as though this is the beginning of everything. And it's not the beginning of everything. When we see that these moral ethical codes and these moral ethical laws, and we see many spiritual ideas and comparisons that we can go one after the other, even though in Acts, you know, if we can even use ideas where it says, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in the words and deeds, that should tell us something right there. Why is that there? He was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. So that would also include the laws of Ma'at.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So that means that there's some writings there that's giving us an indication of where these moral ethical laws are coming from. If we look at ideas that we see in Amenemope, for instance, so we see the same story of Amenemope and the same story that we see the teachings of Solomon. You know, in teachings of Solomon, with ideas like that thou may be fixed like a pig upon thy lips. But if you go to Amenemope in ancient Kemet, let them rest in the chastity of thy belly. Or rob not the poor, for he is poor, neither oppress the lowly at the gate. But we see Amenemope, beware of robbing the poor and oppressing the afflicted. So these are ideas that we see the African people of the Nile Valley created thousands of years ago that ended up in the scriptures. Or we see ideas in the songs and the hymns of Akhenaten. Akhenaten, who his name was Neferkeferuwawa and Ra, he changed his name to Akhenaten. At this time, he's worshiping the Aten at this time period. And as I said before, that even other Europeans like Breasted, who wrote his book, The Dawn of Consciousness, he's one of the early Europeans who started to do some of the comparisons, with the writings in the Bible and the scriptures and with the ancient papyruses. And he caught hell from his own colleagues, himself, when he did those comparisons, but one couldn't deny it.
Okay.
But when we look at how some of the Europeans who've done the research, because a lot of the research that's come down to us, in ancient compared to ancient Egypt, these are Europeans who have done this research. Okay. But again, just like the church have always tried to keep a capstone on this, and the Western religions have tried to keep a capstone on this, there's still those who are trying to, reveal this information. But back to the hymns of the disc of Akhenaten. Thou hast made the heavens afar, in order to shine on it. But we see in Psalms, who has stretched out the heavens like a tent. We see Akhenaten. Every lion comes forth from his den, and all the serpents bite. But we see in Psalms, when all the beasts of the field creep forth, the young lions roar for their prey. Or in Akhenaten, how manifold is what thou hast done. We see in Psalms, O Yahweh, how manifold are thy work. So no one can deny that many of these ideas were taken from African people. And we're talking about the Kemetic Africans of the Nile Valley. Without them, it took thousands of years. This was not something that happened in a 6,000-year period. That's the story that we get of the creation story in the Bible of 6,000 years. We're talking about thousands of years before that time period. And, and as I mentioned so many things, one account comes up after another. Even at that time period, when I go back to take the group to Temple of Seti I, to the Temple of Abydos, there this is the world's first holy city called Aptu by our ancestors. There was no Jerusalem yet. There was no Mecca yet. But the hall of the ancestors in this great hall called the Ptah Soka Shrine. Here Seti I is showing his son Ramesu 76 sultans, or kings. The first one starting with Normer, about 5,000 years, BCE. Now, according to Meron Djehudi, who the Greeks refer to as Manetho's, he gives a time period of 5,700 years BCE. Europeans give a time period of 3,200 years BCE. But in any case there, whatever date you take, whether it's 3,200 years BCE or 5,700 years BCE, there's no Europeans yet. They're not on the scene. But back to this wall. No nation on the planet Earth can show you a wall of 76 kings, the first line of the Old Kingdom. That's, we're talking about from the first dynasty to the sixth dynasty, that's over 1,000 years. And then from Normer down to Seti I, who's showing his son Ramesu, his ancestors, that's over 2,000 years. From us, from Normer to us, is over 5,000 years. There's not a nation on the planet Earth can show you a timeline like that. Now, keep in mind that the creation of the world, the creation of Adam and Eve, is 6,000 years. So here we see that approximately 800 and some odd years after the creation of the world, Narmer, this Simatawi, is reuniting Upper and Lower Egypt. So that tells us that this creation story is a somebody else's creation story. It's a Hebrew creation story, but it's not the creation story. Now, when we look at this whole creation story, and in the garden, here we see Adam and Eve are created in the garden, but we also get a story because she ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's the reason for the world's sins. Here we see a more misogyny here. And the reason for her menstrual cycle is to remind all women of this first woman who ate from this tree. Okay, but they also have a son named Cain and Abel. And Cain kills Abel and goes out to the land of Nod and finds himself a wife. Now, there are some theologians who have said that that's the sub-Negroid race trying to give a reason why these other people who, when Cain killed Abel and went out to the land of Nod, he went and married someone out in the land of Nod. So that tells us there's some other people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that this is the sub-Negroid race. But that, again, even that story of Cain and Abel is a corruption of Asar and Aset. Asar and Set, not Asar and Aset. That's a comedic word for Isis, but Asar and Set. Because here's the story that even though Asar and Aset were created, okay, simultaneously, okay, that's the Netter Hedge, divine husband, she the Netter Hemp, divine wife, but equally, their opposites were created. His opposite was created, and that is the evil brother, Set, who was jealous of him, crucifies him. Got 72 conspirators to cut him up into 72 pieces. Here we see the world's first Cain and Abel story. Here we see the conflict of the warring twins that we get, whether we see the many accounts that we get in the Bible, starting with Adam and Eve, or Jacob and Esau, and on and on and on. This is the whole idea of the good brother and the evil brother, of Set killing Asar. This is the foundation of it. So now that we are going through an awakening, and I think that this is a spiritual awakening to the African people, we're starting, many of us are starting to look now, starting to awaken out of this deep sleep, just like Europe did. Keep in mind, Europe did not always have this, okay? When the church shut this knowledge down for fear that people would see how the church got this knowledge, how the Bibles were created, then this is what started the whole Inquisitioners, those who burned people at the stake for revealing anything about ancient Egypt, you know? People like Giordano Bruno, okay, where they burned him at the stake, where he was saying all this came from the ancient African mystery system, or as he was saying, the ancient Egyptian mystery system. Okay, this is where all this sacred knowledge came from. There's scientists, Galileo, Copernicus, and others, and the whole heliocentric idea that the sun is in the center of the solar system. This is where many of them had to recant on that, or they'd be burned at the stake. This was all the knowledge that was starting to slowly awaken Europe, that was coming up from African people's knowledge of the Nile Valley. But the church had a capstone on it, because the only knowledge they wanted the people to know is what the Bible was saying, and that was it. And that's where we have been, in a lockdown. So if I can say that if we go through an awakening, if Europe have gone through an awakening off of ancient African knowledge, then this is going to have to be the awakening that we are going to have to come out of this post-traumatic slave syndrome after the Maafa being physically and mentally enslaved. This is going to have to be our awakening of this ancient spiritual knowledge that we have got to go back to understand.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, I want to get the calls involved, and they can get involved in this conversation at 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263, and your brother Reg and brother Ralph involved. When we come back, too, I want to go back to something that you touched on, and it's two questions, one leading to the other. But we'll take a break. And again, this Sunday, this is just a prelude, Sunday here in Philadelphia, May 18th at 3 p.m., Baba Ashra Kwesi will be at the North American Motor Inn, which is 4444 City Line Avenue in Philadelphia. The topic is what we're dealing with tonight, the African origin of the Bible and the Quran. We'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, yeah, we the same brothers from a long time ago. We were talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got to respect your trappers and the way they freeway in. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be out there now. And I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. Because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation, and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on the local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. If they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our minds and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us they got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're going to play it on the local TV station. All you 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. But somehow they're feeling the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They're feeling real independent, but they're just pulling contracts with a man. My average guy will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue, but if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? If they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally clouded your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know, that's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters to take it down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. and we know who ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS has got to stop. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, they'll start calling you scarecrow, thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game. Or worse yet, saying that you really don't know. That's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. You can't talk respect on every other song or just every other day. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and let everybody know it. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know, they said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane. You have got a brain. You haven't gone lame. You have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. We're talking about peace.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with historian, lecturer, and master teacher, Baba Ashra Kwesi. He'll be in Philadelphia on Sunday, May 18th at 3 p.m. at the North American Motor Inn, 4444 City Line Avenue in Philadelphia. The topic for Sunday is what we're touching on this evening, the African origin of the Bible and the Quran. Brother Kwesi, two questions. Two questions. One will kind of lead into the other. We see when we look at, and you've been there, I've just seen pictures. I see pictures of images that carved in stone, images on the temple walls, and images of some of the sarcophagus or coffins, as they call it. And it shows some of our ancestors, well, the ones I've seen, with their hands crossed over their chest with a rod and a staff in each hand. What did that symbolize? And that'll kind of lead into my second question. But tell us what that symbolized.
Okay, those symbols are called the Heka. Okay, the Heka is like what we see in some of the Christian paintings of the shepherd's staff, or you see the European Jesus sometime holding that symbol. And the other one is called the Heka. Okay, and everything in Kemet had a exoteric interpretation as well as an esoteric interpretation. And what I mean by that, it had an outer view as well as an inner spiritual view. The outer view, it represented the flail, is to flail out negative energies, okay? The crooks would symbolize to pull in the positive energies when you see the crooks. But at the same time, when the king called the Nusu, when he crossed his arms with the Heka and the Heka, it also showed that he was ruler of Upper and Lower Egypt. Now, this is where we get in songs, okay, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, okay, and it talks about my rod and my staff may comfort me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is where we get that from ancient Kemet. So when you see the Pope wearing that, holding that Heka staff, that is the Kemetic staff that Asar, who's the ruler of life, okay, in the afterlife, in the spiritual realm, called the Dwat, or we refer to as the heavens today. So he holds that staff because he's the ruler, okay, of your judgment in the afterlife. So here that ends up with the symbol that we see generally with the Pope and other bishops holding that staff. That's the staff of Asar.
And that kind of leads to my second question. Studying ancient African culture and even looking in the Bible, you see that when Moses is teaching the commandments to the people, or the word that he had got from the Almighty, telling the people that they're supposed to teach these things and live by them. When you walketh by the way, when you lieth down, when you're rising up, showing that these things were supposed to become a part of the individual, each individual. But we see now a new model of how we dispense the word to one another. Is that more of a Eurocentric way of teaching the spiritual significance of the word, supposedly from the Almighty? When I say a European, we see now that it's a model of a pastor or a preacher standing up, telling individuals what they're supposed to do, what they can and cannot do. And we see that that model was sort of taught to us in our chattel enslavement here. It's kind of like a loose interpretation of what I'm trying to say, but what I'm asking, is that a Eurocentric model of how we're supposed to dispense the word to one another?
Well, so you turn in terms of the teachings of the moral code of right and wrong?
No. I'm talking about, not the moral code of right and wrong. I'm talking about how it's dispensed to our people. And I'm saying that because...
Having a minister
exactly.
At the pulpit.
Yes.
And that type of thing.
Yes.
But keep in mind that our ancestors did not see necessary a mediator between us and the divine force of the universe. Okay. We refer to as many names. Okay. They understood that we all had a ka, okay, a spiritual development in all of us, and that's what we had to develop. And this is the reason why Ma'at played such a major role in ancient Kemet and the teachings of Ma'at, that this is something to be a part of your daily life, okay, as you walk, as you speak with each other, that you are doing Ma'at, you are doing truth, justice, and you are doing righteousness. This is the reason why the Romans feared the African Gnostic teaching. The African Gnostics were some of the early African Christians. It's interesting enough that, you know, many preachers haven't asked, why did they kill the North African Christians called the Gnostics? Why did they murder them? Why did they destroy the North African church? Okay, that's a serious question. That North African church were the Gnostic teachings. Why did they behead Cyprian? Because they were teaching that spiritual development. They were teaching that whole moral code, meaning that, you know, this it's a way of life. Ma'at is a way of life, that you didn't need a mediator between you and the divine force in the universe. Okay, so the Romans feared that, okay, because they wanted to control humanity. So through the control of humanity, and we're going off on another subject now, but this is where the creation of this Serapis Jesus, okay, you had to have this mediator between you and the divine force in the universe. So our ancestors, even though they had spiritual representations, okay, even though they had a sar, okay, representing the judgment, okay, in the afterlife, okay, but it was a way of life to live. So this was the spiritual teaching. And even though you had priests, and one taught the spiritual, and you had various levels of priests and various levels of teaching, okay, of that spiritual teaching, but that teaching was all based off of a way of life. That was the code of Ma'at, you know, to be Ma'at. It's earlier when I was saying, before the break, when it says, I have not. So it makes a big difference versus thou. Because somebody's teaching you that. And someone says, you know, thou should not do that versus I have not. That means you're already living by a moral code, a moral law. You know, someone's not actually teaching you that. Okay, it's a way of life.
Yeah, see, that's what I was trying to say. These things were supposed to become a part of our people as opposed to someone standing up on Sunday or whatever day preaching these things to you on a Saturday and then taking a collection. I look at that as a Eurocentric model.
That comes out of a purgatory. That comes out of the Middle Ages.
Okay, all right.
Where they created a terrorized God, okay? And the terrorized God is that... you know, this is a way of fleecing the people of their money in the name of God that is brought right down to the day. So it's out of fear. People are not giving out of the pure Murray or the Kemetic word, as we call love today. They're not giving out of that. They're giving it out of fear because they're taught their damnation. They will be burned in hell. Okay, now back during the Inquisition period, they burned you literally. Okay, so now they do it mentally and psychologically, that the devil will burn you forever and ever if you're not giving. And this is what many of the preachers use, okay, in the church for your, you know, saying your damnation, if you're not tithing, that these are the things that are going to happen to you. So people have been taught to believe this, and they've been brainwashed into it. And this is the reason why, you know, pimping in the name of God, okay, is one of the biggest pimp games going now, okay, because why can get so much out to people, because it's all based off of fear.
The I think it's always signs among our people that the spirituality of our people is there. It's just dormant, so to speak. The origin of these things was what I'm trying to say. You know, I talked a couple of weeks ago when we had Chiki Akua on, and the image of the two hands raised, because our people still do that now. And, you know, it's almost like a spiritual tag on our people, because no other people on the face of the earth worships God in that fashion. Or when they get the spirit, so to speak, or get happy in a church, where the hands go up, or they run about with their hands raised. But you see that on the temple walls. Talk about the significance of that, and how that's a kind of like a spiritual mark on our people that we have to this very day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the arms up, okay, is a symbol, is what is called the Ka, okay. And as I spoke of the early Gnostics, these are the early African Christians, they were like a conduit of the Byzantine Roman Christian world then, and they were drawing from the ancient spiritual system, and this is the reason why the Romans feared them, okay? So they called it the caress, but the Romans corrupted into the Christ. They saw this as a spiritual development, so the two hands up was the symbol for the Ka, okay, that the Nazis call caress. It's for your spiritual development, so they gave praise. And the symbol, okay, of that divine force of the universe, okay? They didn't worship the sun, but the sun was a symbol, okay, a physical symbol for the divine force of the universe. So they gave praise to the rising sun, okay? And it had various names, okay, in the rising of the sun, okay? So it called Keparah, okay, meaning that there's a transformation, a spiritual transformation that's taking place. And at high noon, it was called Ra. Okay, that's the highest point, okay, of your spiritual presence of that Ka. And then, of course, it had Atum, is when the sun went down. Now, we see this in the church today. We see, why is it that people go to church on Sunday? Or they have sunrise service. They get the Holy Ghost. They run around in the church. They get the Holy Ghost and all these types of things. And when you look at Leonardo da Vinci and Raphael's picture of the Serapis Jesus, when I say the Serapis Jesus, I'm referring to the white Jesus. You see, they call him the Dancing Christ. The image of the Raphael dancing Serapis Jesus, okay, or Antichrist, or meaning anti-divine spirit, he's generally with one leg down and one leg up, and he's got two arms up, okay. That Dancing Christ came from the Dancing Ka that I show our groups on the temple, the dancing spirit. He's got this arm up. He's running, showing that he's out of the swathing, meaning the mummification. He's a spirit now. The Romans didn't understand spiritual things. They took it literally, that the physical body would rise up. So they said that this Jesus that they created at the Conference of Nicene, okay, the Serapis Jesus I'm speaking of, okay, here they said that he would rise up out the grave. Okay, this is where we get the idea that dancing Christ came from. Okay, so when you see the people running into church, okay, and they get the Holy Ghost, they're doing that same thing. They're right, their spirit, their arms are straight up. Now, there's things, you know, like in Proverbs, okay, where Proverbs says that the prudent man looketh well to his going, but the fool believeth every word. So, you know, once we start to understand the African spiritual knowledge and understand ancient spiritual principles that came up out of the Nile Valley and how they, as you said, carved on the temple that I've witnessed with the arms up, then we can understand Nehemiah. So when we look at Nehemiah chapter 8, okay, verse 6, when it speaks of Ezra, bless the Lord, the great God, then all the people answered, Amen, Amen, while lifting up their hands, and they bowed their heads and worshiped the Lord, with their faces to the ground. Well, first of all, Amun Amun, that is the spiritual deity, the spiritual god that started during the Middle Kingdom. Okay, that's the Amun that the Greeks took up out of Africa, okay, and incorporated into the prayers at the end of their prayers. But when you see, as I said in Nehemiah, they bowed down. Okay, they kneeled down and faced their heads to the ground. So when we look at that, even in Islam, we see the bowing down, okay, and they're facing their head to the ground with the salat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then we see, as I said, they raised their hands, or as it speaks of in Israel, they raised their hands before Amun, lifting up their hands and saying, Amun, Amun. Is this also where the salat, where Islam, where you see the Muslims, when they do the salat? I actually do a comparison with the stone carving of over 3,000 years ago, showing the Muslim giving the salat with his arms up. And I show the carving in stone equally with the arms up giving the prayer, okay? So it's interesting also when you see that these various, the five daily prayers, okay, of the Salat, okay, in Islam, it speaks of the sunrise, okay? That's the Salat prayer. Then it's got the noon prayer, okay? And then it's also got, here's one that's called the ASR. The ASR, that's, keep in mind in Kemet it didn't have vowels, okay, but now, that is the Asar, the declining sun in the Salat prayer. Okay, now, here, giving praise to the various movements of the sun, from sunrise to sunset. That's what our ancestors saw in Keperah, and the symbol for Keperah was a beetle. Okay, and why they used a beetle, because they observed what the nature of what that beetle did. And that means the beetle doesn't fly until high noon. Okay, so this is where, and also because how it rolls up its dung into like an egg and it hatches in the egg, they're using nature to understand creation. So this is where they use that symbol of the Keperah, meaning transformation and resurrection. And that is the symbol of the Keperah and the various phases of the resurrection of the sun that we still see in Islam today. So from the sunrise of Keperah, which is the reborn sun, that's from 6 a.m. to 12. So how could this be heathen sun worship when we see the same exact prayer that's going on, not only with the Muslims, with the various phases of their salat and the various movements of the day of the prayer, but even with Christians who go to church on Sunday and have sunrise service. So all of this is dealing with either a solar, lunar, and also stellar events that our ancestors observed, and many of them around astrotheology. And then if we really want to get understanding of how they developed this salat, then we have to go back to, and why they got their arms up, then we got to go back to Mut Mechet. And Mut Mechet is Mother Nature. And you go to Kemet, and you go to the temple of Ipirasut called Luxor, and you see these large tekenus, okay, that's called obelisks today. The Washington Monument is plagiarized from that. And all the other tekenus that you see in cemeteries and around the country and so forth, and that they carried all over the world. It's in St. Peter's Square, the Vatican, and Istanbul, and also in Paris where they tore down one, and you see the tekenus. These are tekenus that were all taken from Kemet. But the one in Luxor, at the base of it, is a baboon. And this baboon is standing up, okay, with his paws, okay, up and facing the east, okay, up in the air. So here is the very beginning, and they're using the symbolism of that Zoop type of the baboon, showing the resurrection of the sun. They didn't worship the baboon. So with the early barbarians, okay, who were coming in as invaders, they didn't understand the Zoop type, okay, of what that various symbol was conveying, okay. That would be like 2,000 years from now when if someone were to find the fish everywhere, okay, on back of people's cars and seeing, Jesus represented the fish. Well, one would say, are they fish worshippers? But that's the Zoop type that they're using
okay.
to convey this, what it actually is, the sun in the constellation of Pisces, or whether we're looking at Jesus as a lion or a lamb or a ram. And even though in Islam it doesn't use images, but when you look at the choreography, it's a symbol of nature. But even though they don't show animals or anything like that, but if you go to the Quran and you look at Surah and you talk, and it has a chapter that speaks of the aquabat, okay, that is the spider. And it's talking about the spider. It's talking about, they're not worshiping the spider, but it's speaking of that Allah is that of a spider who builds his. So here, these are parables that they're using, okay? So this Kemet did the same thing, but Kemet has been relegated to animal worship. Or if we're looking at the Quran and Surah was talking about the nil or the bee, and it's talking about the parables to the bee and as well as the ant. So the various chapters are dealing with animals and insects and so forth. They're not worshiping them, but they're parables. This is the same exact thing that Kemet did. So the baboon, as well as the kepara and other symbols, equally represented the same idea in ancient Kemet. Okay, but Kemet is the one that's been demonized and vilified, but without their keen observation and without their empirical observation of Mutmetchet, called Mother Nature, then we would not have these spiritual ideas that they observed for countless thousands of years. They were not just wandering. African people were not just wandering around, waiting for everybody to come. So it's from their observation, with nothing but the forces of nature were around them, even though it's still around us today. But with all these man-made things, we can't see the spiritual connection to a lot of things, with cars and all these devices and so forth. And we're totally disconnected and getting further and further away from spiritual ideas because of these physical devices today. But if I can just make that parallel so we can understand it. So by you saying lifting up the arms, there's a whole lot to that that I deal with both more in-depth with my Christianity lecture, but I touch on, I will be touching on some of that in this lecture and the African history and spirituality, the origin of the Bible and the Quran. Well,
you know what, because we got a lot of calls out there. I guess they're listening in at the Cuban University, just like Rich and Ralph. But we're going to keep on moving forward. Brother Kwesi, we see that John the Baptist in the New Testament is using the water immersion as far as baptizing people back to repentance or to righteousness. That's another example of a spiritual ritual that predates the Bible. Talk about that.
Well, we have to go back to the Greeks, and one Greek named Herodotus, who lived around 450 BCE. Because a lot of what has been passed down to us has been from, as I said before, early European, like the Greeks, who passed many things down. So Herodotus went to Kemet, okay, and got a lot of information from the Kari heads, that's called priests today. And Herodotus talked about how the priests were required to wash twice during the day, twice during the night as well, and they had to be entirely clean shaven without body hair. They had to be circumcised, okay? So here they had to be pure, okay, and going to the temple. Now, when you go to the temple of Ipetosut called Karnak today, the greatest temple on the planet Earth, you can put the Vatican, the Westminster Abbey, the Notre Dame, all of these cathedrals and Gothic churches comfortably down into this temple to this very day. Over 80,000 students matriculated in this great temple. Here's the earliest spiritual center, the earliest theocracy, okay, and spiritual ideas came from temples like this. And there you still see the sacred lake where you had to be purified, you had to be baptized, you had to be cleansed. This is where the whole idea of ablutions comes from. So we think of ablution and we think of the mosque where one has to wash themselves, okay, and cleanse themselves, even though they do their hands and their feet and so forth. But ancient Kemet, they had to take a full body bath, okay, as I said, as Herodotus said, during the day and during the night. So the idea of the ablution that we see, or the holy water, okay, is referred to in the church and so forth, all this came from this temple that was started in the Middle Kingdom over 4,000 years ago. That was started during the time of the Amenhotep, at this time in Waset, where the Africans, okay, were able to organize themselves in southern Egypt to defeat the barbarians from coming in. But before I get to that, this is where the first baptism came from. Now, as I said, there was an exoteric interpretation as well as a esoteric interpretation, an inner interpretation. So the lake also symbolized the goddess Mut. Who is the goddess Mut? That is the wife of Amun, okay, that I said that we say at the end of our prayers. Because in the ancient city of Waset, you always had the triads, okay, Every place had a triad. This is the earliest spiritual trinities, long before Rome, Florenstein, you know, Mary, the Holy Ghost, the Father, and so forth. But here we see Amen, Mut, and Khonsu. Now, what relationship does it have with that lake? Okay, and baptism. Well, that lake also symbolized when the priests were baptized for their 40 years of initiation, by the way. It symbolized the amniotic fluid of the goddess Mut. Here's where they're symbolizing a nehest, meaning a new awakening, a new birth, a spiritual birth, okay, because they have achieved this spiritual awakening, okay, in this physical life, that their first baptism, they're acknowledging, came from their mother's womb. It had nothing to do with the Pope or priest or someone during the time of the Easter holidays baptizing you because of your sin, because of this story of the misogyny, because Eve ate from the tree, and because of the sexual intercourse of Adam and Eve, that's the reason for the world's sins, and because of that, of your mother and father coming together and producing you, okay, then this is the reason you're told that you're born in sin. Kemet did not have anything like that. They saw that here, the church, seeing this whole idea that when the woman breaks her water, life comes out of her. We have a lot of theories about how we came here, but we definitely see that male and female comes from her when she breaks that water. So your first baptism took place in the amniotic fluid of our mother's womb. That was the first baptism. You were born clean. We were not born in sin. So the lake equally symbolized the amniotic fluid of the goddess Mut during the time when the priests finished their 40 years of initiation. They're going through the nehest. A spiritual awakening is taking place. So the corruption of the church, when they created this whole baptism thing in 418, this is the Catholic Church that corrupted this, okay, and took that from the woman when that was Mut or the goddess Aset, going back to that Netra Ankh, or that symbol of divine life, the symbol that represents the uterus. That's why they used the Ankh. Okay, they didn't have any hatred towards her, so they used the Ankh to symbolize life. And out of that amniotic fluid, without it, we would not be here. That's where our first baptism was baptized, and the purity of that divine force, okay, of that micro womb. That's how our ancestors saw us. So that's ablution had many spiritual connections to that. So every temple got a lake. Every temple had a spiritual baptism, and this is the reason why you have the sprinkling of the holy water in the church. This is the reason why you see the Muslims doing the ablution today. The foundation of that, black people started. African people started there. The temples and tombs are still there telling of these stories. One account after the other, Brother Booker, we can see where these stories came from.
We're going to take another brief break, and when we come back, we got about 20 more minutes left into the program with historian, lecturer, and master teacher, Baba Ashra Kwesi. He'll be in Philadelphia on Sunday, May 18th at 3 p.m. at the North American Motor Inn. That's 4444 City Line Avenue. Give us a call while he's still here. It's 215-253-7263. That's 215-253-7263. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. My rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone, oh no. Something inside so strong, oh, something inside so strong. The more you refuse to hear my voice, tumbling. Deny my place and time. You squander wealth that's mine. My light will shine so brightly, it will blind you. 'Cause there's something inside so strong, so strong. I know that I can make it. Oh, you're doing me wrong. All that my pride was gone, oh no. Something inside so strong, oh, something inside so strong. Brothers and sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough, look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway, we're gonna do it anyway. Something inside so strong, and I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was wrong, oh no. Something inside so strong,
welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined this evening in conversation with historian, lecturer, and master teacher, Baba Ashra Kwesi. He'll be in Philadelphia on Sunday, May 18th. The topic, the African origin of the Bible and the Quran, and that's what we're touching on this evening. Baba Kwesi, you know what? I want to ask you a question. We got about 15 more minutes left in the program.
I had a migraine when I opened up, brother, and I talked my migraine away.
Listen, just like you said, we're at a community university, and I think the knowledge that's being dispensed tonight is valuable to all our people. In fact, that's really what I want to ask you. You know, I talk with people a lot, and that's just here. You travel the world talking to our people in various locations around this globe. And a lot of the people I talk to are ready to throw up their hands with our people. They figure we're a lost cause. It's too much European influences. It's nothing you can do with them. You travel the world. And then with incidents like this foolishness that's going on in Nigeria, and whether they're a radical Islamist group or whether they're just misguided Africans that did this foolish deed over there, snatching young ladies. You see a lot of this stuff done in the name of quote-unquote religions. I think these religious beliefs have been detrimental to our people, and it's stopping our people from coming together. But that's not my question. My question to you, Brother Quaze, is you travel the world. You see the state of our people. And I know that the work that you do, and you're sincere with the work that you're doing. You've been spending half your life doing this work. How do you feel about the state of our people? Where is it going? What do you think? You travel the world. You talk to our people in various locations around this world. I want your opinion. What do you think about the state of our people?
Yeah, that's a very serious question, Brother Booker. To think about the state of our people, of course, is going to bring, dejection, a very sad state about when we see what's going on with our people, no matter where we find our people. And that should tell us that something is wrong. Something is not working.
Okay.
It should tell us that, that there's a lot of alien forces that are working against us. And these alien forces, not only are they working against us, but they're keeping us spiritually unbalanced about who we are as a people. I think that some of the things that I talked about are things that hopefully it made some of the people think about some things. But even if we dealt with the whole spiritual foundation that our ancestors had around the goddess principle, it's totally oblivious to many of our people today. The foundation of the recovery of our people starts with the whole spiritual connection to that womb where we came from. That's very important, because when you start with how our ancestors saw and saw their spiritual connection with symbols that I talked about, like the Ankh, which is a symbol of the uterus, what I just finished with, the amniotic fluid, or the first baptism, they understood that whole spiritual nature. So imagine if a young child is raised with that. There's no way he could desecrate her. There's no way he could, no one couldn't pay him millions of dollars to call his sister a bee. The nation starts with her. This is why our ancestors put a lot of emphasis on that spiritual connection. When you talked about the sarcophagus in the opening of your show, and you see those sarcophagus in Kemet, and when the king laid down in that sarcophagus, or even when the general person from the population even made their sarcophagus, they put a goddess in the ceiling of the sarcophagus, so when that lid shut, that connected him back to that mother, that great mother. So this is where we have been totally disconnected.
I don't mean to cut you, but I didn't know that. It's the image of a woman
the African goddess Nut. She is in the ceiling of that sarcophagus when they shut it. Not only is she in the ceiling of that sarcophagus, but in the tomb itself, she stretched all the way across.
Okay.
And you see her giving birth to the sun. Okay, because again, the universe, as I started with, represented Nut, that represented the macro womb, because they saw it out of a feminine principle, because it gave birth to the S-U-N sun, like our mothers gave birth to the S-O-N sun. So they called it the Sa-Ra, that means the son of the sun. So this is the spiritual connection that connects us back to who we are as a people. Why is it that so much energy is around desecrating African women? So when we see the Boko Haram, okay, in Nigeria, who did they take? Where's the pain coming from taking these young women? That goes back to the womb. That goes back to the nation. She is the nation. Now go back to ancient Kemet, when some people say, well, you know, if we were such a great people, then what happened? People ask that question all the time. Well, of course, we see that Kemet is very old. Kemet got old, invaders came in, Kemet couldn't defend itself. But before that time, there's something else that happened, Brother Booker. And this is where we were, in some cases, at fault with this. Let's go back to the Fifth Dynasty. Let's go back to Sahura. Let's go back to the time period of over 4,000 years ago, where the kings were calling themselves the Sauras. Okay. They were the son of the sun. Now, foreigners, okay, could not take a Kemetic daughter, but they would marry their daughters on the throne of Kemet. They had no problems. They didn't see their daughters as a goddess or a personification of a goddess. But in Kemet did. Kemet would never marry his daughters to foreigners for a peace treaty, as they were doing during that time. But Kemet had no problems taking a foreign daughter on the throne. Okay. So when we get the whole idea where the sons of God married the daughters of men, so here they took and put foreign women on the throne of Kemet, and her allegiance went to that foreigner, to her father, who in that foreign land. And this is what we do today. As soon as a brother get a little bit of money, an entertainer, actor, athlete, or whatever, first thing he has is a foreigner on his arm.
Okay.
And this is what's causing the destruction of the African race. Not only is that causing destruction of the African race, but it's also the desecration of the very life force that sustains us as a people and a nation, and that is the African womb. And that's why when you look on Norma's palette, it's in the Cairo Museum, one of the first pieces that you see there, okay, that was excavated from Upper Egypt, he's in a procession, and what is he carrying? The placenta of his mother. That's how powerful it shows that the nation starts with the building of the African woman as a goddess. For him to have in that possession, he is actually carrying the placenta. That's powerful.
So what you're saying, in a nutshell, is as long as we stay at odds, and I'm talking about black men and women, because there's always some type of problems, whether contrived or true, especially dealing with this media and the television, showing dissension or dissimulation between a black man and a black woman. You're saying as long as we don't get beyond that, it's going to be tough for us to understand the vision we're supposed to go as a people?
Exactly. But keep in mind, when Aset, what did she call her husband? Asar. Neter Hedge, divine husband. What did Asar call Aset? Neter Hemp, divine wife. They put divinity in their unity to go into eternity. So what was the objective? Okay, what was used to destroy the African man and woman to make sure that slavery would be effective on the plantation? Was destroying the African man and African woman to make sure he would not have any connection to her, by keeping him out in the field and only used him as a stud, okay, to make the babies but not have a connection to the family. Because having a connection with the family, he would fight for that to defend her. So this neo slavery today, because of the culture of what made this whole process and the process of why we have this, in many cases, disunity with the black man and woman today, was based off of what they did in making the slave on the plantation and the disrespect that some black men have towards the black woman. So we go back to the spiritual teachings of our ancestors thousands of years ago, before these barbarians were even out the caves. He saw her as a Neter Hemp, a divine wife. And she saw him as a Neter Hedge, a divine husband. It's that divinity that's going to pull our unity together to go into eternity. Without that, without acknowledging that micro-universe, because without that womb, there is no nation. And this is what our enemies know. So they have no problems paying little young brothers millions of dollars to do to say all the most vicious lyrics against her while she dances to the beat.
Brother Kwesi, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Sunday. I know that you'll be, because you do your annual trip every year. Talk about the dates. I know that you go to Egypt, and then you also go to Ethiopia.
Yes, sir.
Talk about the dates and, the itinerary, if you can.
Yes, sir. Well, we do our annual trip. This will be the 35th year coming up now to Kemet. So I say 14 years with the Grandmaster Teacher, Dr. Ben. And this year will be July 12th to July 26th. It's a 15-day educational tour, trip of a lifetime. Everything is paid for. You can go to for that the price that we have up there on our website. You can go to our website at kemetnu.com. That's spelled K-E-M-E-T-N-U.com. You can print out the brochure. We have room for people who want to get on at the last minute. So we're planning to go. So I haven't missed a year in 34 years now. And we also do our Ethiopia trip annually every winter. That'll be December 28th to January 8th that we go to Ethiopia. Equally, we can go there and see the great culture coming up out of the Nile Valley that we see was spread down the Nile. So this is a great experience. And for those who are coming out to the lecture, that lecture will be the African history and spirituality, the origin of the Bible and the Quran. Some of the things I talked about, I'll be talking about, but much, much more with visual documentation from my field research. And Brother Booker, this is not for people to believe in what I'm saying, but only to think about what I'm saying. And above all, to hope to open up our own African ancestral genetic memory bank. We all have a lot of knowledge within us. The genius is residing in us. But a lot of times it's lying dormant. And until we open up ourselves and start to think for ourselves, then we can start to see knowledge. I would never imagine, Brother Booker, that if someone told me 34 years ago that I would travel the world, take hundreds of brothers and sisters back to Africa, I probably had a hard time believing it. So we all have this genius within us, but we've got to break the whole mental slavery today. And again, it's always an honor to be on your show. This is definitely a Communiversity. To educate, to liberate, and again, for brothers and sisters to go to do the research themselves, okay? And once you do the research yourself, you'll equally find even more than even that I've even found researched on. So this is something that we've got to go back. And again, we hope that we have invoked some of the thoughts and some ideas to show how after our ancestors go back countless thousands of years, Brother Booker. You got to excuse me for today because this was a rough day for me because I don't know why I had, you got the seasons. When the seasons change, you got all the stuff out there in the air and it causes migraine, headaches, and all kind of stuff.
No, it's no problem. No problem.
The environment is really causing a whole lot of problems with us today.
You know what? Listen, before you leave, let me ask you a question, and then I don't think it'll take much time to answer it. I heard one of the historians on the nationally syndicated Carl Nelson show a couple of weeks ago, and somebody asked him about the audiences that he appears before, and is one audience more conscious than the other? And I don't remember the historian who it was, whether it was Tony Browder. I don't want to call names because I'll get it wrong, but I do remember his response. He said that Kansas City, and I was kind of surprised. He said that the brothers and sisters in Kansas City not only talk the talk, they walk the walk. It's a really conscious audience, and the people really get involved. I'm talking about, in their daily life. They're really active trying to make a difference in their communities. In your travels, in your world travels, I'm not just talking about here in the United States, is there a more conscious band of people, men and women, than anywhere, other places that, as opposed to, different other areas?
I can't really say that there's one area that's above all other areas. I've been to many places where you have conscious community, and in many cases, places where I go repeatedly, or at least annually and every year, like Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a conscious community there. You have a conscious community in Los Angeles. These are places that I have, I started in L.A. That's where I lived for many years of my life. So, of course, you have a lot of a conscious community there. Now, of course, in Kansas City, I've lectured there. I don't lecture there as much as I do in places like L.A. and Philly and D.C. and other places around the country. If I were to look outside the country, I would say the Caribbean. I lecture down there once a year. I do a tour. In fact, back in October, I did a tour. When I go there, I generally tour about five, six, seven islands.
Mm-hmm.
And brothers and sisters are very powerful down there in Tortola, a very strong group down in Tortola, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, a lot of the saints, as I call them, St. Martin. So the brothers and sisters have done a lot of good things in terms of their community and educating the community. And when I was in Uganda this past January, I went to an area where they have a whole African spiritual church on African spirituality. They've gotten rid of all the, they don't have any of the European images. It's all based on African spirituality. I lectured there. This is up in Uganda. The students at the Kampala University, they brought me in to lecture.
Okay.
At Kampala University. So we see that there is an awakening. There is a spiritual connection at Addis Ababa University. Eagerly, I was invited there to lecture. So again, the information that they want to know is the same information that I talk about around the country, and they equally want to know there. So we see there is a spirit that is working. There is a spirit that is taking place. Our African ancestral knowledge is spreading in diaspora, and so we just can't look at it from that we're just doing it in the United States.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, in many cases, what we have done here is, and to a certain degree, has helped in the spiritual awakening with some of our brothers and sisters. I got to look at Toronto, Canada. When I go up there, there's always about 1,000 people come out. Okay.
Okay.
So, and this is all based off of titles like the African origin of the Bible. You know, so when you have that many people come out and you have the African origin of the Bible and titles like that, that means people want to know. They want to know us and what we are doing as an African people, what we have done, and how many of these spiritual principles are the foundation of many of the belief systems that we've been taught to believe, although corrupted through white idolatry and white images and outside forces, okay? But getting back. And I think that the foundation of it all is seeing the African woman for who she is and how our ancestors saw her as a goddess. And through that spiritual connection, as I said before, in ancient Kemet, that was the nation. It was represented as a cosmic goddess, Ma'at. You know, why would they have her represented as truth, justice, and righteousness, okay, and spiritual order and law, okay, and spiritual and moral law? See, it was based off of her. So I think this is what we've got to get back to, Brother Booker. And again, the information has helped some of the people that were listening to the program. We're happy. Again, if you want an eyewitness account, we can return back. This is the original Tanetta land. This is the original Holy Land. When we think of a Holy Land, it's right there in Africa. From the biblical account, everybody is coming into Africa. Okay, from the biblical account, from the Greeks, everybody's coming into Africa as we got it. So if they're going back, I think we should go back. If everybody else has benefited from coming into Africa, then I think we should go back to Africa, at least go back to see what our ancestors built for thousands of years, and nothing on the planet Earth predates what our ancestors built there.
I want to thank you for being with us this evening and look forward to seeing you Sunday.
Yes, sir. Look forward to seeing you, Brother Booker, and I'm to be, again to be on your show.
Peace.
Peace.
I want to thank everybody for being with us this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know, have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
To save the children.